The DeFalco Files is an entertainment-based program. Some memories of certain events might be fuzzy. All opinions are that of the host. Content might not be appropriate for children and some adults. Listener discretion is advised. And remember, the truth is here. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents The DeFalco Files with FSW owner Joe DeFalco and your host, Matt Michaels.
Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here on The DeFalco Files with the owner and creator of FSW here in Las Vegas, the future stars of wrestling, Mr. Joe DeFalco. Joe, how you doing a couple weeks past COVID now? You starting to integrate back into society, or did you enjoy it enough to just be like, you know what, I'm just going to kind of stay in for the next, 2 years.
2 years? You know, I still got the nagging cough that's really annoying. Other than that, I feel, 100% even while I'm coughing. I feel good and, feel fine, trying to stay busy, trying to, talking with some companies about joint shows. Had a meeting today with another person who is really pushing doing live streaming, that has a lot of experience in the business, that it won't stop us from keeping the network going, it won't stop us from being on Twitch, it won't stop us from being on Fight TV, just an added revenue stream. We talked with the people at IWTV, hear some good things about that with the way their pay-per-view structure is. The issue, for the fans who don't know, when we charge $15 for a pay-per-view on Fight, we only get a third of that. So, it's a lot of work that we're doing for a much smaller piece of the pie.
Yeah.
And that's why we're doing network exclusive events on the FSW network, to where, all the money is ours. Now, obviously, there's administrative costs, and Ben, who's running it, gets a percentage for running it. But so far, so good. We're 2 months in, and we got way more subscribers than I ever thought. I thought it's going to be like, but it shows the support of the fans.
Yeah.
You could pay $9.99 for the WWE Network. Who's really going to pay $7 for our stuff? I'm proud of our stuff. We have great stuff. I just didn't think that it would be possible, but we've been lucky. And these fans, you could just see when there's GoFundMes or Indiegogos for a lot of these smaller companies, they're able to kind of make ends meet because, these fans they're so supportive if they like the product. And that's why I always talk about how we're trying to grow to get ourselves known by more people. I'm proud enough of our stuff that if we find a new wrestling fan and have them check out our product, we feel very strongly that they'll get turned on to it, and a good percentage will want to continue to see, what's going on and moving forward in FSW. We had the network exclusive event this past week that we aired. And hey, the last three matches, Chris Bay came on commentary. He got involved with Ice Williams, who then, as he thought his night was over, Funny Bone decided to get involved. So there's a lot of surprises on the show, the heavyweight champion was there, Graves. We had a No Limits champion there. And, a few weeks earlier, we did another network exclusive where we had the return of Sepha and Hammerstone. And, as I've always been very proud of, is our roster. And besides the established talent that is as good as anybody there is in the business. You know, we have such a great core of younger talent, like an Ice Williams, that, you know, a Shogun, a Hiro Lu, the Unguided, that are very, very strong. And once they get, you know, rolling to where shows are more consistent, you know, I'm pretty sure those guys are going to get booked pretty much anywhere they want to go. You know, I know, for example, next week, the Unguided. Actually, I believe Damian Drake, Jay Vidal, they're going to work Gangrel's show next week. Nice. You know, down in Florida. So there was another event with Remy Marcel and Funny Bone that they're going to be working a show also in Florida, which is a different show than Gangrel.
Yeah, GCW down in Florida.
Right. Which, yeah. I heard a rumor that that show got canceled, but I got to verify it to see. Because we, you know, we have a network exclusive event that we're trying to have, you know, every week on the network. So you're paying $7 a month to get 4 exclusive events that you can only see on the network. Now I feel, hey, we get, that's a great value. Yeah. Now, if we can get more fans to be aware of what we're doing, I'm pretty sure a lot of people would, you know, sign up for that. And then when we have the big pay-per-views, we can offer it on Fight for people because they have their fan base. And when they put it on their page or send an email, hey, live FSW event, and we got the Unguided, and we got Hammerstone, and we got Sepha, and we got, you know, Graves, and Chris Bay maybe, and Funny Bone, and Remy, and Death Proof, you know, either pay $7 a month on the network, or pay 15 on Fight. Because the thing is, through Fight and through Twitter, we may promote the network, but there's a lot of people who are only aware of us through Fight TV. So despite the fact that we're only getting $5, the thing is, if you don't really know much about FSW, you see the show that we're doing, you buy the pay-per-view. You spend $15. Well, you're nuts if you think that on commentary, myself or Jake is not going to mention, hey, we have a network where that show that you just watched for $15, you can watch for 7 monthly.
Yeah.
And now, hopefully, you know, those pay-per-views we're going to offer once a month, once every 2 months, the bigger ones. But now maybe because we're running regular shows, that those fans will now, instead of paying $15, they can get 2 months of the network.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's the long-term goal. So with this other company that we're talking with, you know, as well as IWTV, you know, we got the information on that. So we got some decisions to make. But they have a very large fan base, IWTV, that's different than Fight. So in that realm, you subscribe for $9.99. And even if we want to do the pay-per-view, we're not guaranteed anything. But they have the trackers that supposedly are, you know, real. And they'll pay you X amount per somebody watching. Right. You know, it's based on the time frame and the minutes and all the other stuff. But the company that we're talking with on the East Coast, that we're trying to do an East versus West, you know, joint show down the line, they say they do pretty well. And looking at their roster, they got some good talent, but they don't have the talent we have. So if they could do that well, then we should be able to do as well or hopefully better. So it's just trying to get those revenue streams out when, you know, business is much slower than it had been, you know, pre-COVID. And even when we first reopened, when things seemed to be a little more lenient, things were good. But as things tightened up, it's really, you know, slowed down the business.
You know, that's an interesting thought that I had about. So you get to essentially, because of the situation of COVID and there being no live audiences, you get to experiment with trying to get a audience through streaming services and networks and, you know, all this stuff that you can do online to reach a bigger, you know, worldwide audience in this case. My question is, you know that the dedicated fans will be going back. Wrestling fans, FSW fans will be going in person when things are fully back up, you know, whether it be running Sam's Town or another venue for the big shows. Does it make you wonder that once the shows are able to be up and running, and maybe people have gotten used to, and again, not the rabid fans, but maybe your fans who, you know, got the network and like to stay home now and maybe, you know, have a bowl of popcorn and watch the network for the live events. Do you think that would possibly take away from fans coming? Or do you think maybe the opposite effect will happen where, because so many people are hungry for live entertainment again, that the possibility of drawing bigger crowds could be in the cards just because people are sick of being inside?
Well, you know, in both situations, it goes both ways. You know, you can talk to, you know, people now, and some don't care, and they go to a restaurant, they go wherever they can go when they can go. And then there's a good portion of people that, despite the restaurants being open and the movie theaters, and, you know, most of these places are open.
Yeah.
You know, why can you sit at a movie, but you can't go to a wrestling show?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, well, if I go to the movie theater up the road that, you know, has 200 seats, I could put 50 people in there, but I can't run a certain thing like Sam's Town that has, you know, 1,000 seats if we put the bleachers, whatever. Well, okay, we can do 25%. We can cap it at 250.
Yeah.
But they won't let us do it. And there's people that are always going to be leery, just like there's people now, whether it's students or fans, that, you know, they're a little, you know, worried about getting the COVID, or they have an older relative at home. And, you know, everybody has their own opinion, and that's also the problem. So if you believe one way, we're okay with that. You're choosing to stay home, awesome. But if I want to choose to do something, you're now dictating to me what I can and cannot do.
Right.
Yet you're, in one breath, you're telling me follow the guidelines, you know, okay, we're at Sam's Town. We take out seats. So we put 250 seats in there and we space them out. So a group of four can come in the group of four, a group of one, you still got to have the distance between another group of two.
Yeah.
Why can't I do that? You're telling us if I go to a restaurant, I can do it. You know, in a restaurant, when I go to P.F. Chang's or Cheesecake Factory, you know, there's more than 50 people there. Yeah. So why are they allowed to have tables of not more than six? Okay, well, four, six, they got 80 tables. So they still got 20 tables going. And I'm pretty sure most of them have more. But they got 20 tables at the average of, you know, four in a party, whatever. So they're close to 100 people.
Yeah.
That are in there in probably a way smaller confine than at Sam's Town.
Well, on top of that, the thing that floors me in that analogy is one simple fact. All those people at that capacity in an indoor place have no masks on because they're eating. All your fans at Sam's Town would have masks on. You know,
right?
It makes no logical sense.
It just, you know, and even at a restaurant, they could be smoking.
Yeah.
You know, like in the casinos.
Yeah.
You know, I went to Sunset Station, and I believe the limit is now 5,100 people. Okay? Yeah. So you can have 5,000 people at Sunset Station gambling, of course, where a half, let's just say a third, are smoking and drinking. So that's 1,700 people to 2,000 people that are generally not wearing masks.
Yeah.
Most of the time, because they have a drink in one hand and the cigarette in the other, you know, and God forbid they order a sandwich from Fatburger and they're eating at the machine.
Right.
You know, we're not even counting that. So, you know, it's pretty disappointing that, as we said, you know, we're literally a little shy of a year of this. And it's like, okay. Well, you know, and I look at the numbers, I check and see things, you know, and I saw 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, there was this positivity rate that is the big deal. And it was over 20%, which is pretty high. I'll be honest with you, you know, like 22%. And then I looked like each day over the last month, it has progressively gone down to where it's now at like 15%. Well, people are getting the vaccines, I guess. Most people don't get it frequently a second time. So since more people got it and there's more vaccines, that means there's less opportunity to get it. Why can't we reopen a little bit more? You know, I'm not saying, hey, everybody, let's put 65,000 in Allegiant Stadium. But in Tampa, you could have 22,000 for the Super Bowl. But at Allegiant Stadium, you can't have 5,000. You can't have 10,000. And I believe UNLV let fans in. And, you know, toward the end of the year, I believe they had a few games. And UNLV in the 65,000 seater, I think they allowed 3,000 fans, which is probably 2,000 more than they would normally have anyway. So, you know, nobody goes to UNLV games.
Yeah.
So, you know, 3,000. From what I understand, it was the Raiders' decision not to put the limited amount, but why couldn't they have 15% or 20% like Kansas City Chiefs? I never heard. Kansas City from day one had at least 16, 18,000. I remember the first Monday night game or Thursday night game they played, and they had that many people there. I never heard like, oh, my God, what a super spreader. For any of these people who went to the Kansas City Chiefs game.
Yeah.
You know, they're always quick to say, oh, super spreader event, super spreader event. You know, when they had the Trump rally with the guy who owns the Ahern rental. Oh, you know, there's a good chance it's a super spreader event. Well, it must not have been, because if it was, we would have heard about it in every newscast.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of everything, people are still going to get it. You know, I think my kid had it. A few days later, I got it. A few days later, my wife got it. A few days later, my mother-in-law got it. Thankfully, everybody was fine. 3 weeks later, in each case, two and a half weeks later, we're all fine. Move on. 98.2%, you know, of the people who get it recover.
Yeah.
You know, so let's do something.
Did you ever think of maybe copying the idea of the NFL with the cutouts, which I found very fascinating? And obviously baseball did it, and some of the other sports had done it, to maybe even, you know, generate a couple more bucks per, like, a sponsorship by having... You know, if I can't be at, let's say, if the Future Shock and, you know, the school shows, you know, here's, you know, $50 and a cutout, and, you know, you still get yourself on camera.
Yeah, but let's break that down. Okay, we're going to charge $50. That's a little steep. Well, how many shows do you get for $50? Well, if you get 8 shows, that's 2 months worth anyway. So, you know, I'm not sure the value in it, because, you know, I was talking to my wife about it, because the Super Bowl looked great. Yeah. Like, of course, I made a Facebook post and people are idiots. You know, I'm like, wow, looks like a great crowd at the Super Bowl. You know, it looks to be a sellout. And of course, you know, somebody's got to write, oh, just so you know, they're cardboard cutout. It's like, bro, I know, that's the joke. You know, it's like unbelievable. But it looked like a full house. You could not tell.
Yep.
So my thought was, hey, we could sneak more people in if we get a whole bunch of cardboard cutouts with masks and we tell the fans not to make any movement, we could fill the place up. But you don't really know exactly who's the cardboard cutout or who is it. But the problem is, if those cardboard cutouts are $50 and we need 60 or 50 of them, that's $2,500.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, we got to run a lot of 50 person events to make $2,500 in profit to then break even.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Unless the wrestlers want to, like, you know, donate their pay for that for the day by getting a cardboard cutout of themselves so they can watch themselves wrestle, which might be a good idea. Because then a guy can make believe he's a cardboard cutout and he can utilize that to do a run-in. So,
and based out of having a cutout of yourself, you know, a wrestler who would have a cutout of themselves, what wrestler do you think, if they bought a cutout of themselves, do you think the cutout would actually be a better wrestler than the guy who bought it?
There's a few, but I don't want to like bury anybody today. So, because it's like funny, I was watching the Bud Light commercial with like the cardboard cutout, and now Matthew McConaughey did it in the Super Bowl commercial. I thought that was great.
Yeah. You know, a lot of the talent over this past year that has signed and, you know, been on major shows, whether it be Impact or NXT or AEW, I kind of had a little, you know, I wanted to pick your brain a little bit about something that I really have never heard many promoters talk about, and that is when you look at what those companies have done with those talents, is there anything that sticks out to you that, you know, companies are doing right or doing wrong with these people that you know very well from having, you know, nurtured them and helped train them and helped promote them? You know, how does that translate from going from Las Vegas to one of the bigger stages? And how do you see the talents have to maybe adapt their mindset or what they're used to be able to, you know, work with a bigger company as not to piss people off, but also not get lost in the shuffle?
Well, let's start with WWE because that is the biggest company of them all. We've been very fortunate. Lacey Ryan signed last month and Kevin Cross, Karrion Cross signed last year.
Yep.
And those are two totally different situations. Cross was a guy who over the last few years after he got developed at FSW wrestled in AAA. He wrestled at Impact. He got to wrestle at Bloodsport. So he was really, really ready.
Yeah.
And they immediately saw in him somebody they can push to the moon immediately. You know, even 5 years ago, whatever it was, guys like Adam Cole, that whole Ring of Honor crew that went over, it took them time to just get on NXT.
Right.
Nowadays, it's like they seem to have signed 100 people. And in signing those people, a lot of them went directly to NXT. Most of the time, it would take time because they wanted the new signee to adapt to what was the WWE style.
Yeah.
Slow it down. You know, everybody can't be the Young Bucks and flying around. That's not what WWE is about. They like the characters. They like personality. They like the promo ability. And the wrestling skill is almost second nature to the total package.
Right.
Now, they sign Lacey Ryan. Lacey, who's been in this business for 6-7 years, up until about a year and a half ago, was basically in the bubble of Utah and Texas and not really moving and shaking and doing a lot of things. She comes to Vegas, and immediately through our connections, we can get her some talent to come in and wrestle, but she's also gets looked at by Impact, where she gets the opportunity to work Taya and Jordynne Grace. With us, she worked Tessa and Taya. And the thing was, she didn't have a lot of experience outside Vegas now.
Right.
And she did her championship wrestling from Hollywood and wrestled Heather Monroe a lot and things like that. But she didn't have even though she was in the business longer than Cross, you know, Cross was fed the Chris Masters and the Kenny Kings in FSW. But then he would also be in the other companies at Maverick Pro and getting to work, you know, Paul London and, you know, Sammy Guevara and a whole bunch of extremely talented people.
Yeah.
So he was ready. Lacey, when she had told me she had signed, I was pretty positive that she would be going to basically the performance center.
Right.
That they would work her into the mix and she would be somebody that down the line would hopefully get on NXT. Because years ago, Sean Ricker was a guy who we felt would be like, boom, straight to the main roster. He never even got on NXT.
Right.
Because they wanted him to adapt to their style and things just didn't work out between them. Lacey, before she was officially signed, because she was signed to be a part of it, but her start date was after the tag team match that she had.
Right.
And she went right to television, which was shocking to me. So, and looking at things now in the WWE, Keith Lee gets over huge in NXT. They bring him to, same thing with Matt Riddle. They bring him to the main roster, but because there's so many guys that they got to put into top spots, hey, they bring in Keith Lee, he beats Randy Orton. Well, 6 weeks later, he's kind of mired in the mid-card, and Keith Lee is basically just another guy again, as is so many others, because you cannot have 50 stars on a 2 or 3 hour show.
Yeah.
You know, because look at Jeff Hardy, you know, he's just there putting people over. Like, you would think there'd be far more, you know, Kofi's back, you know, he's got to get his wins, and AJ, he's in the mix, you know, The Miz and Morrison, you know, I thought they'd be this great team that they would use. And they're probably putting over Bad Bunny at WrestleMania. And yeah, they've lost all credibility of being top guys. Miz was a top guy. Morrison comes in, you know, everywhere he's been away from WWE, he's a top guy. And right, he came there and they gave him, what, a 2 week run as tag champs. And it wasn't even like, you know, they had a bunch of cool matches. It was like, They're friends. They're getting to do their thing together, but there's nothing special. Rey, yeah, Mysterio, nothing special anymore. It's like, hey, let's try to get the kid over. you know, because there's just too much. There's just too much.
Yeah.
You know, and you look at AEW, and I'm dumbfounded watching AEW. It's like, how many guys, not I'm dumbfounded about the wrestling. I'm dumbfounded, like, how many matches you can have in AEW Dark? There's 35 people on that show. Right. And out of 35 people, 26 don't even get on their main show the next day. And it's like, LAX are basically beating up jobbers on Dark, and they're just lackeying for Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've said it to anybody who would ever listen. It's like, LAX and Pentagon and Phoenix were the two hottest tag teams in a company nobody would ever believe would be able to produce the two hottest tag teams in the wrestling business, and that was Impact.
Yeah.
And they were the hottest free agents in LAX. A lot of people thought they'd go to WWE. And again, I was never the biggest LAX fan. And then when they did the show in Vegas, I got to watch Santana work Phoenix, and it was by far, of the 2 days of taping, that was the best match.
Yeah.
But earlier, LAX was feuding with the old LAX, so it was more of just brawl matches.
Right.
So you didn't see the ability, and then you watch Santana, and at that point, really, they really pushed LAX, and they deserved it. And they were like, wow, you know, they're less money than Pentagon and Phoenix. They're more affordable for me. And we had talked on numerous occasions to get them on the Mecca shows, you know, as great as Pentagon and Phoenix were, you know, we felt LAX was that hot tag team that would be awesome to have.
Right.
And now, even, you know, SoCal Uncensored, Scorpio Sky, I barely see him. You know, it's like,
he's got a good,
he was a firecracker.
He's got a good podcast, though.
You know, he's an awesome wrestler, but yeah, they're, you know, again, Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy, they're over as fuck. But that doesn't mean that they're deserve. You know, it's like we have our top, our A-list of tag teams, and the other guys have to earn that spot to get there. And it seems like they're trying to push these younger guys over the top while they're neglecting the super talent. Like, Kenny Omega and Adam Page had nothing to do, so they threw them into a tag team and made them tag team champions.
Right.
You know, and even the Young Bucks, you know, they were kind of just floating around for a while, not doing a lot. So why would you keep signing, you know, teams? I think the Impact AEW thing's great. It gives an opportunity for a team like Private Party, you know, the opportunity. They need reps.
Yeah.
They're still pretty green. So having Matt Hardy is fantastic for them. Having them work more matches is fantastic for them. I was complaining before, like we were talking with Jungle Boy, and, you know, 2 months before AEW was even getting ready to start running regular shows, we couldn't use him anymore because he was exclusive and they didn't want him to work anywhere else. Well, the kid's 21, 22 years old. He doesn't have thousands of matches under his belt. The way he gets better is working Chris Bay, and it's working, you know, Douglas James.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, and Carl Fredericks and whoever it is. But now you're not giving that guy that opportunity. So how does he develop and get better? He's got great raw talent. Put another couple hundred matches under his belt, and he might be at that level as good as there is. So the way they're moving, the way they're pushing people, and it's like, you know, it's great for Danny Limelight, and it's great for Will Rude. These are guys, you know, we've worked with. But it's like you're finding more and more and more spots. Brian Pillman, dude's on like every week now. Yet he's not even really signed with AEW.
Yep.
But, you know, you have a core roster, and now you got 20 other guys that you're kind of using on a frequent level, you know. And the AEW version, I don't really care for, because, again, you're oversaturating.
Yeah.
You know, And then you got Impact. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Impact. I like working with them. They're cool to deal with. But they also have that super duper indie mecha kind of talent that they use.
Right.
You know, when you went there before, you had the Brian Cages and you had Sammy Callahan and you had OVE and you had the Rascals. And yeah, all of a sudden, and then you have Chris Bay, and then you bring back the Motor City Machine Guns. You know, those are guys, Moose, you know, these are guys that I would look at, you know, for mecha shows. Right. And we always joke about how, like, everybody in that Impact locker room is pretty much work for us. The crazy thing to me was the way that we presented those guys is so different from the way Impact presents those guys. When we had Pentagon and Phoenix at our show, we had a shit ton of Mexican fans for Pentagon and Phoenix that were buying meet and greets and picture stuff with them that I didn't see at Impact.
Yeah.
Like, they neglected the Latin market, and they were more about getting their TV. Which is also the fact that, you know, a Chris Bay, John Morrison, Brian Cage match is going to be a 20-minute match for sure. While in Impact, you know, Morrison and Cage, it's going to be 9 minutes of TV time.
Right.
So everything's kind of, it's TV, it's TV. So, you know, a good match sometimes is 4 or 5 minutes. You know, we give these guys the opportunity to work. So I never felt like, hey, we got guys on Impact, and a month later, people would question, like, well, they were just on Impact. Why is anybody going to care? Because we're presenting the indie version of them, which is the super cool style of wrestling that a lot of indie fans like. That's why Impact, unfortunately, hasn't really garnered that type of fan base.
Right.
Like, if you look now, people are like, why is AEW working with Impact? It ain't going to do nothing for them. And it's like, it's going to do something for everybody. But Impact benefits more because now Impact's got people on TNT on a Wednesday night, like Gallows and Anderson, presented as the Impact Tag Champions, who people know from WWE, hey, you can check them out on Impact.
Yeah.
You know, Kenny Omega, hey, he's going to be on Impact. You know, don't tell me Kenny Omega fans are not going to now watch Impact waiting for Kenny Omega to be on the show.
Right.
So how does it help AEW? Well, there are Impact fans. So now they may be in turn give AEW another shot. Maybe they didn't care for it, but now some of their favorite people are on that show. Hey, Matt Hardy's on that show. That's a big deal. Matt Hardy's a great get, you know? And like, oh, who's these guys Matt Hardy with? Oh, I like them. They're pretty good, you know? And now Private Party has an opportunity that they may not have been on Dynamite this week because they have a million tag teams.
Right.
They're on Impact, and now those highlights, because this is a different world, man. It's like, if you didn't watch it on TV, you didn't watch it. Now right. Everything's streamed. You go on YouTube, you go on Twitch, you could go anywhere, and it's pretty simple. On Twitter, if word gets out that Private Party and the Rascals, even though they're not there anymore, killed it on Impact, and somebody posted some, you know, little gifts and little stuff about the match, and now all of a sudden the Rascals post it and Private Party post it, all those fans are going to want to check out that match.
Yeah.
So, you know, nobody's going to take out WWE. So what do? You get as close as you can to doing that. So AEW is that number two company. But there's such a far difference that the number two company, AEW, you know, usually, but it's pretty close, beats the third rated WWE show.
Right.
Okay. So But adding more viewers because of Impact, making more awareness of the brand because of Impact only helps out. That's the reason why we want to work with a GCW, a Defy, you know, a West Coast Pro, a Gangrel's company, an OVW. There's all these other companies that if you could work together, you know, that, you know, there's that one level, WWE. They're going to draw 20,000 fans when they come back. And at a WrestleMania, they're going to draw 50, 70, whatever it is. Well, AEW, as everybody saw, when they first ran their special shows, and they ran once every 6 months, they were able to get 17, 18,000 fans and sell out very quickly because that guy from Chicago, the guy from New York, the guy from Florida, the guy drove in from California and Arizona, they're going to the MGM to watch that show.
Yeah.
And then if you saw, as they kind of progressed later on and got TV before the pandemic, they were working 3,000 or 4,000 seat arenas because now that guy in Chicago, he can't afford to go to TV every week.
Right.
He's got a lot. He's got a job. He probably doesn't make that much money. That's a trip for them, for all those people. So they weren't doing 16,000 people anymore. They were doing 2. They were doing 3. They weren't selling out anymore.
Yeah.
So they need to grow. So how do they grow? Well, they can go back from 2,000 to say 5,000. While the strong indies that draw 300 to 500, maybe working together with people, can go to 700, 800, but more importantly, get more eyes on the product. Because if we work with a company from the East Coast, hopefully they got a good enough following where now new people will say, holy shit, this Hammerstone guy, I know him from MLW. He's really good. Zeffa Fatu, oh, he's Rikishi's kid and the Usos' brother. Man, this guy's really good. And the Unguided, oh, they're exciting, you know?
Yeah.
And there's all these people, because then we'll mix in some talented national acts that are either from AEW or Ring of Honor or Impact. You know, and now we're trying to make ourselves grow. It's only good for the business to people who work together and have like minds. Are there egos involved? Sure. There was a few people I tried working with or whatever, and I'm pretty lenient. I understand, you know, hey, you guys come to Vegas and all our guys are going to beat your guys. Well, that would make no sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, we make the situation work. To where, hey, our guys wrestle your guys wrestle our guys. A couple of matches are just your matches. A couple of matches are just our matches. So everybody gets a chance to shine. And you could say, hey, Defy had a couple of matches on their own, for example. And, oh, this guy was good. That guy was good. Oh, that FSW, Hammerstone, and Sepha, that was really good. And then, hey, Chris Bay worked Jordan Oliver because that was the two companies.
Right.
You know, there's going to be a buzz about it. It's going to be, you know, the idea is to make these special matches that haven't been seen before. And, you know, I'm 1,000% behind working with people, but you got to give and you got to take.
Right.
You know?
Let me ask you, you brought up Brian Cage. You know, I found it interesting that And smart that they started when AEW brought in Brian, you put him with Taz. Because Brian's he's a good worker. He looks like $1,000. You know.
Million bucks. Don't be selling him short like that.
But, you know, Brian, just as a person, is, you know, a very even keel, like, low-level person. So putting a mouthpiece like Taz makes sense, gives them a little legitimacy, but then you all of a sudden they water down by adding more people and more people. Now you got Taz's kid and, you know, Ricky Starks and Will Hobbs. All of a sudden this thing's like now a faction. Would they not have been, or would you see, if you have a talent like that, and obviously you had Brian, if you put a mouthpiece like that, would you want to just start elevating that talent little by little to the point where he's finally in the position to become your, you know, TNT champion, if you don't feel he's ready for your heavyweight championship, or even in a situation like this where you have a working relationship now with Impact and people going over there. Brian was literally just with Impact up to a year ago. Wouldn't it make sense to bring in Taz and Brian to basically say, you know, hey, I'm throwing down the gauntlet because, you know, you guys, you let me go. And guess what? I'm back and I'm going to kick some ass. Is it hard to find, as a promoter yourself, different angles or ideas where if you do maybe feel that there's a misstep, you can kind of erase or go back or add or subtract to it? Is that something that frustrates you when you see bigger companies then using guys in certain ways where you're going, what is this? You're wasting this guy, especially in a business where, let's face it, your body takes so much punishment that you never know when your next bump is going to be your last bump. So wouldn't it, you know, behoove the companies to really make a lot more smarter decisions in terms of thinking in that long run of, hey, if we've invested 3 years into this guy for, you know, for a contract, let's polish him and make him look great. And let's not just, you know, bring him in, make an exciting, oh my God, because, you know, WWE, like you said, with the main roster, bring him up, oh my God, and then Vince buries him for, you know, a half a year to 3 years at a mid-level or even lower. Is that something that is frustrating? And is there any way that the wrestling business can, you know, essentially not do an arms race where they're signing everyone, like you have all this talent and then you're fucked when you, you know, you look and fans get pissed because you're not using this guy right, or, you know, fans get bored because it's, you know, the same matchups that we're seeing constantly for, you know, 6, 7, 8 months on end of seeing this guy and that guy wrestle each other and do a story that's really going nowhere.
Okay, here's my take on this. I try to explain to people because, you know, we have some great talent. Guys like Hammerstone and we said, and Graves and Remy and Death Proof and Unguided, and we have the issues with the tag division being so strong and deep. I try to explain to people because everybody, as I've always stated, believes they should be at the higher level than they are.
Right.
The low card guy thinks he should be the mid card guy, and the mid card guy thinks he should be in the semi main, and the semi main guy thinks he should be the champion. And what I try to explain to everybody is, listen, you need to understand something. There's only 8 or 9 wins on every show. Okay. Now, unless you're changing the belt, the champion's going to win. Well, if Lacey's the women's champ, she's probably going to win until she loses the belt. And if she's on that show, she's getting a spot.
Right.
If Ice Williams is defending the No Limits Championship and Ice Williams is not losing the title, he's probably getting the win. And the heavyweight champion's going to be there. He's probably getting the win. You know, Hammerstone is our top guy. So you could intertwine. If Hammerstone or a Chris Bay is working on the show, they're probably going to win. And when you're pushing a tag team like the Unguided or Death Proof, they're probably going to win. So now you already got 6 wins.
Yeah.
So how does a young guy break through? Well, it becomes very difficult. And the more guys you have, the more difficult it becomes. You know, using AEW as an example, because that's one that I go crazy. It's like, you know, I got personal favorites that people I've worked with that I thoroughly enjoy. They're super people, easy to deal with. Lance Hoyt's one of those guys. So I was very excited for Lance that he got the opportunity to go to AEW. And holy shit, he's got Jake the Snake Roberts as basically his mentor, as his mouthpiece.
Yeah.
And they bring in Lance, and he murders people over 3 or 4 weeks, and immediately he wrestles Cody Rhodes and loses.
Right.
So where do you go from there? Now you bring him back to beating up random people in parking lots. It's like he's already lost that luster of, holy shit, this guy's 6'7". You know, he's got Jake the Snake with him. Then you bring in Brian Cage, and then you did the same thing where he came in and, you know, there's a difference. Back, there's a difference between dominating for 3 months and then losing for something, because you've made this guy must-watch TV. In the WWE, or mainly the WWF, when there was this new guy, his name was Edge. You know, week one, you're watching a promo video about Edge and what he's going to do, and he's coming to WWF. And that's probably 3 or 4 weeks worth of stuff.
Yeah.
So by the time he makes his debut on TV, you're kind of excited because, wow, this looks like a bad motherfucker. Like, this guy's going to be something special. And then he comes in and he beats the shit out of a whole bunch of, you know, a few low card guys. You know, then he kind of steps to the next level. And it was the same thing with like a Hulk Hogan. You know, they'd bring in Earthquake, and Earthquake would demolish some jobbers in 30 seconds. Then all of a sudden, you know, he'd beat up, you know, some of that lower level, not enhancement talent.
Right.
Then all of a sudden he'd get to somebody in the mid card and he would destroy them. Now all of a sudden Heenan has him going after Hogan. But now we're 3 or 4 months in of watching this guy for every week. Now he's perceived as a legitimate threat to become the champion. And that was at a time that Hulk Hogan didn't lose for like 8 years.
Right.
But you still believed in that feud. You know, same thing with Randy Savage. When he first came in, you knew this guy was going to be awesome. And, you know, it was the only time ever you've seen that the wrestler was a bad guy and his manager was good.
Yeah.
She was a good guy. You liked her, but you despised him. But the more you watched him, you're like, wow, this guy's awesome. So they had to turn him. And then he became nice to her. And he became one of the most popular wrestlers ever.
Right.
You know? But the thing was, everything was a build to something. And I was having this conversation yesterday. We were talking about the Big Show. And the Big Show, every time you see him on TV, it seems like everybody has the same opinion. It's kind of like, ugh. Because, you know, they kind of bring him back as a baby face, and he ends up knocking out the heel. Like, really? Like, it happened 45 times. Back in the day, a guy named Andre the Giant could show up in WWF, but then he would leave the Mid-South. He would leave to Japan. He would leave, so he was always kept special. While the Big Show, he has to wrestle all the time.
Yeah.
So he's wrestling, you know, even 40 weeks out of the 52. And if you're not going to make him the dominant champion, he's now losing the guys who are 6'2", 6'1". And now he's not that special attraction that Andre was able to be. Andre would always come back and be a special attraction. And they would protect Andre and have him just beat up people, you right. know, until they did the angle with Hogan, which was one of the best-selling angles of all time. Like, you know, you were legit like, holy shit, Andre the Giant never lost. How is Hulk Hogan going to beat him?
Yeah.
So when he did beat him, it was like the biggest momentous thing in the history of professional wrestling at the time.
Right.
And that's what's lacking in WWE. You know, every time Orton has to wrestle Edge, and now it's Drew. And it's like, if I wrestle, you know, Orton wrestles Drew McIntyre for Drew's title. Drew wins clean. Why is Orton getting a title match the next month?
Right.
He's not. But in today's day and age, he is. And guess what? He just lost again. So now what are they going to do? Oh, now they're going to do a steel cage match. And guess what? He loses again. So 3 months in a row, the heel or the babyface or whatever, Kevin Owens on the other side.
Yeah.
I would much rather seen Adam Pearce get his ass whooped by Roman Reigns, it would have been something different, you know, something to where Kevin Owens could have got some good heat back on Roman Reigns, and but at least it spaced out their time together.
Right.
And the feuds never end. You know, I was talking about the Jake the Snake and Ravishing Rick Rude. He kissed Jake's wife.
Yeah.
Bing, bang, boom. Led to the pay-per-view match. Jake won. They both went their separate ways. Rick Rude lost nothing by losing to Jake, you know, because Jake was Jake. But now Jake went on to his next, you know, whether he went back heel, whether he feuded with Savage, whatever it was. And then Rude was still able to be a top guy because, again, they only had 25 top guys.
Right.
And you could know who those top guys were because go ask any 40 and 50-year-old that isn't a big fan of professional wrestling. They all knew who Hacksaw Jim Duggan was.
Yeah.
They all knew Hulk Hogan. Oh, everybody knows the Macho Man. Everybody knows who those stars were. Now a guy was Curt Hawkins, Brian Myers. Who are these guys?
Right.
You know, they were seen so infrequently on TV. They never cut promos, and they usually never won matches.
Right.
But ex-WWE stars, so then when the promoter calls them up, a guy like me shakes my head like, what the fuck? You got this guy wants that much money? They're not draws.
Right.
And whether that's Vince McMahon doing that on purpose, making them only valuable as WWE superstars instead of professional wrestling superstars, because back in the day, you could go, like, hey, I remember when Jake the Snake went to WCW for a while. You know, I remember when Arn and Tully went to WWE, won the tag titles, went back to WCW. You know, now where do you go? You know,
right.
AEW is finally in a place where, you know, they got a guy like Chris Jericho. They got a guy like Pac, who was miserable in WWE. You know, they got Omega. You know, they got a great mixture of LAX and again, Pentagon and Phoenix, the Young Bucks. You know, those three should have been ruling the tag division, and then they get the Revival. So you got four teams that you should have been rotating against each other, having matches of the year.
Yeah.
And, you know, that stuff hasn't happened. So it's like, to me, AEW is kind of disappointing. You know, they got so many guys that they were able to, they got a Moxley, you know, they got so much talent from everywhere. And a guy like Jericho transcends.
Right.
As old as Sting is, he's still Sting. People want to see what the guy can do. And then they add, you know, a Jake the Snake and a Tully Blanchard. So they mix that old school with the new. The problem is they have this many guys, but they should focus on this many guys.
Yeah.
You make your stars, you know. Keep Will Hobbs on AEW Dark. You know, when you talk about the faction, yeah, it's cool to have a faction. But in the old days, the Islanders were managed by Heenan, but they didn't get involved with Hercules' business.
Right.
You know, he managed them separately. And Brian Cage should be your A-plus talent that should be at the top of the card and protected as much as possible, at least in my opinion. You know, and because, again, when the WWF was most successful, everybody knew who the stars were. Well, in WWE, is Cesaro a star? Is Riddle a star? Is Andre the star? You know, are the Usos stars? You know, the only ones that I perceive as stars is Roman Reigns, because he's been that guy for so long. Like,
right.
I love Drew McIntyre. He's one of my favorite there is. But whether it's because of the pandemic or whatever, is he a star? I don't know.
Right.
Because never really gotten to – he was never in a position to get that crowd behind him in a match against Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania.
Right.
You know, it's great that he won. Randy Orton is a star. He's been a top guy. Jeff Hardy is a star. and having him lose to Corbin or Elias, and then the week, and then 3 weeks later, Elias losing to whoever, it doesn't even matter anymore. Like back in the day, it was wins and losses were important. Now it's just like singles match loss, tag team match win. We do a triple, we do a six man. I lose again. We do another one, but I win this time. And everything is 50-50.
Right.
You know, maybe that's why Cross is getting over. He showed up in NXT and he just killed everybody. And not that he had a ton of matches, but he killed, what, three or four jobbers. All of a sudden, he stepped up and he thumped Ciampa. Like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have Ciampa a lot, but he's a well-respected person and wrestler.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he had a title shot and he beat Keith Lee. And it was like, wow, probably like five matches in, you know. So I would assume the idea would have been either long-term champion or let's get him into the system, doing what we want, killing people, and now we can get him to the main roster, which I haven't talked to Kevin about it at all. So it's not like I'm privy to information. But right. There really had to be a reason why all of a sudden Cross was doing F5s that he's never done in his career, and the announcers are making reference to Brock Lesnar. You know, I wonder if that was an idea down the line to have Lesnar, yeah, you know, wrestle a Kevin Cross. You know, I don't know. But if it wasn't, then it was pretty dumb probably to make him do the F5 and bring up Brock Lesnar.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, you know, people want to foreshadow. They want to believe. Like, oh, you know what's going to happen next? Like again, my conspiracy theories, whatever you want to call it. So I see Cross's video. The next day, everybody's abuzz because Randy Orton, who to me is kind of similar, he's kind of like that psycho-y kind of character that, you know, you can't trust him. You know, he's going to hit that RKO out of his best friend. He doesn't care, you know. Then all of a sudden, Cross approaches Edge. And guess who came back? Christian. Like, who's to say Orton and Cross won't work Edge and Christian? Yeah. Like, I would do that.
Yeah.
You know, because what is Edge going to do? Wrestle Randy Orton again? I know it's kind of monotonous of him being with Orton, but it's different because now Orton's given Cross the rub and Cross could dominate and beat a guy like Christian, who's not going to be perceived as, and he's one of my favorites of all time, Christian.
Yeah.
But right now, he should be in that Jeff Hardy role and making people look good. Jeff Hardy still should be a top guy, again, in my opinion.
Yeah. So. Did it surprise you, because they're notorious at WWE for obviously tinkering and changing, etc., when new guys come in because it wasn't their idea, their gimmick. Did it surprise you that they stuck with Kevin doing what he does best, and that is this character that, man, they're finding even new layers with it with Scarlett and leaving the tarot cards now. And it's just kind of just, it's pretty to watch how he evolved the character from here in Vegas on that journey through, you know, stopping through AAA and then through Impact. And now he's at NXT and we didn't have to see him, you know, come out as, you know, Dr. Cross or something stupid like that. They literally, here, let's develop it a little bit more and let's see how this works. And it almost steals the show every time. That's why I worry about, do you bring him when he goes to the main roster? Does the old man go, oh, we can't have this guy, you know, doing this. He's got to be, you know, here.
Well, to answer that part first, because I'll go back to the other part because I have an opinion on that.
Sure.
Cross, by looking at him, is the type, body type that Vince McMahon likes.
Yeah.
He's always been known like the bigger guy in really good shape. And knowing the type of promo Cross can cut, I don't think Vince McMahon would tinker with that, because he didn't tinker with Matt Riddle. Matt Riddle's the same Matt Riddle. Yeah. Keith Lee's the same Keith Lee. But going back, I've stated this to everybody I know. Kevin Cross is the only wrestler that I know of that he started in FSW. He was the Tone Man. That was his character. As he moved up the ladder and went to Lucha Underground, he was the White Rabbit, but he was the Cross character that he started in FSW.
Yeah.
Then he went to AAA, and he was the exact Cross character that he was in the other two places. Then he went to Impact, and he was the same exact character. They allowed him, so they, you know, they must have seen more in him than they've seen in just about anybody ever, because now he goes to the WWE, you know, Triple H loves him, same exact character. As you said, they added the depth. You know, the one thing we hadn't seen from Kevin was his promo ability, because Scarlett basically did that stuff. She did the valet manager stuff while Kevin was just the guy destroying people. It's like, and he got to the top without having to hear Kevin Cross, who's a good wrestler, but his promo is a plus.
Yeah.
And he's gotten over without even having to show that yet. And, you know, I saw a couple posts. I saw Sin post some stuff about, you know, the Edge and Sin Bodhi thing. I mean, the Edge and Kevin Cross thing. Because Sin's really good friends with Edge. They grew up together.
Right.
You know,
right.
Know each other well. And, you know, Sin was involved a bit in Cross's training. So he was asking people's opinion about what they saw in that. And, you know, I saw a couple people comment about Cross and, you know, how he seemed nervous and everything. And it was like, I thought it was a brilliant promo from both sides. You know, people nitpick, oh, Edge didn't say his name. Well, other people said his name. Right. Okay. Kevin came across as not intimidated in any way, not a fanboy in any way. You know, he got right in Edge's face and let him know what he thinks he needs to do. And then Edge came back, and that, and his promo was brilliant. Yeah. You know, and I immediately thought, wow, I'd like to see this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to see Edge against Drew McIntyre. As much as, and how cool it would be, I don't really want to see Edge and Roman Reigns, because at this point, I think Roman Reigns, let him go. You know, that whole story that they created, and that's what also kills me. It's like, you watch what WWE did with Cross. You watch what they finally did. They wouldn't pull the trigger.
Yeah.
We had this Roman Reigns for 2 years, but they buckled on doing it. But yeah, he was gone for so long, they came up with that, and it was fantastic. And they even got, you know, they even got Jey Uso as a player.
Yeah.
You know, by doing that, the capabilities are there. So it really makes my mind boggle even more that why it can't be like that for a lot of other people. Like, everybody gets these little spurts. AJ gets the spurt. And then, oh, we're going to put the title on him. Oh, we're going to put the title on him again. Oh, Daniel Bryan, we're going to do this. Oh, we want to push Ali. Oh, he got hurt. We're going to give Kingston the spot. Oh, shit. People are going nuts for Kofi. We're going to put the belt on him. He wasn't going to get the belt. There was no way in hell Kofi Kingston was going to – he was in no position.
Right.
But because of the movement, kind of like the Daniel Bryan movement, Kofi Kingston got the belt. And then everybody got disgusted because he couldn't even get 2 minutes with Brock Lesnar. He had to lose, whatever, 10 seconds, 12 seconds, you know? But the thing is, they're so capable. Like, the writer who came up with that, the guy who's booking for Cross's character and how they're doing that, like, it's almost like an anomaly that they do something that well, but it shows that they can. Why aren't they doing that with a lot of other people?
Yeah.
You know, why'd they bring Nakamura in? He's just kind of like another random guy that was huge in Japan, and WWE, yeah, they gave him some belts to appease him, I guess, or whatever, but he's never had anything lengthy or anything that has, if you look at all his feuds, there's been nothing memorable. Right. I can't, you know, I know we wrestled guys like AJ and Daniel Bryan, but I can't be, oh man, I remember when they did that. It's like,
right.
I don't remember any of it. So it's like, unfortunately, there's so much that could be done that doesn't seem to be done. And that's why their ratings are, you know, 2.1s right. instead of 7.8s.
Yeah.
You know, you can TV coverage down and this. Guess what? We're all staying home a lot more than we were before.
Sure.
So how come ratings haven't gone up since, you know, last February to this February? The ratings should at least be higher than that.
Yeah.
But they aren't. You know, there's no competition. There's no Monday Night Football. Because the hardcore fans are always going to watch, just like the hardcore fans who come to our shows. They're always right. going to watch. And, you know, guys like The Rock and Steve Austin, they brought a different dynamic of people, even a Mankind, Mick Foley.
Yeah.
You know, that people were enamored and they want to watch. Like, man, if they could pull the trigger on Roman Reigns versus The Rock, you know, for the head of the table.
Right.
You know, that's a tried and true story. I've been watching Vikings a lot, you know, and dig that show.
Yeah.
You know, in a few of the seasons, it's always the brothers who end up having that conflict. And it's like, you know, Reigns is become like an egomaniac. You know, he's the head of the table. He's this, he's that, he's this. Bringing The Rock in, the guy who's been there, done that tenfold, that's intriguing to me.
Yeah. Yep.
You know? Not wrestling a random match against Edge because he won the match against any champion. What story is there? You know, we already did the Edge story. He's made this comeback. He's going to wrestle Randy Orton at WrestleMania. You know, he's going to become the champion. Okay, cool. Awesome. There's that story. They were tag team champions together. They were friends. And then Randy Orton laid him out because he didn't want to see his friend get hurt. And he felt he should go back to the family. That's what fans want to see.
Right.
They want you to tug their strings and make them, you know, want to believe. You know, it's like I try to explain with our guys, you know, in that about the emotional investment that, you know, people are trying to do. And it's like we've seen guys like a Ricky Tenacious, for example, okay? Ricky can wrestle, you know. A lot of people don't understand that Ricky Tenacious is a very good wrestler. But Ricky Tenacious's character is what gets him the emotional connection with the fans.
Right.
So instead of going out there and wrestling a good match that nobody's going to remember 3 days from now, they remember that Ricky guy.
Yep.
And that's what it's trying to instill on the younger talent. About, you know, when CM Punk, oh, the pipe bomb, nobody knew. Yeah, everybody knew exactly what he was going to say backstage. But people want to believe.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. People want to believe. They want to believe and you know, that something happened. Oh, man, he hit him with that chair really hard. I think they had some heat. You know, people want to believe that. They want to believe there's a struggle. They want to believe somebody doesn't like somebody. You know, when Hardy and Edge had the thing with Lita, you know, Matt Hardy was way over. You know, my favorite thing was when Bret Hart and Davey Boy and Neidhart left, and it was the screw job. All of a sudden, there was this guy in a black hood. Oh, shit, it's Owen Hart as the Black Heart. That was the most over Owen Hart ever was because it was a personal thing. It was Sean and Brett, and Owen is keeping the family honor. And to me, that was the biggest disappointment that they didn't put the belt on Owen Hart, because Owen was always perceived as this great wrestler who's just this upper mid-card guy who cannot be a champion in WWF. With the Shawn Michaels thing, that was the perfect opportunity because fans were never behind him the way they were, because they loved Bret Hart and he was screwed over. And he can't get his revenge, but Owen can. And then they have Shawn Michaels beat him. Yeah. So, you know, that's all the fans want. They're coming out to the show. It's like I've tried to tell some people, you know, guys trying to get heel heat. Well, when you tell the fat person they're fat, they know they're fat, okay? Yeah. Now, they're going there for an escape, to have a good time, to boo who they don't like and cheer who they don't like, but you have no capabilities of getting people under your skin than making personal insults.
Right.
You know, a couple guys that did that that I didn't use anymore, and I yapped out of them, oh, yeah, you know, I'm sorry. It's like, bro, you know, come up with some new gimmick. You know what I mean? It's like, so now, instead of this person coming to the show and having a good time, they feel embarrassed because the guy gets on a microphone and embarrasses them the way they look, whatever it is. Like, you're here for an escape. You're here to have a good time. You're here to cheer. You're here to boo. You're here to meet new people and hang out with like-minded wrestling fans.
Right.
Now you have shitty fucking time. How many times are you going to go back? If it happens again, you're definitely not coming back.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like, trying to get people, go, you know, go listen to an AEW promo. Go listen, you know, Ric Flair. Yeah, sit down, fat boy. But, you know, that was Ric Flair who did that anywhere else. Rick Rude had his signature line, you know, and the fat, hey, fat boy, the guy probably wasn't 400 pounds that he said it to anyway. It was just an insult. But insults have changed over the years. You can't say certain things anymore.
Right.
And now it's like, you know, getting personal is not the best way. You want to get personal with the guy you're feuding with. That way the fans can get behind somebody. Yeah. And hopefully the baby face. You know, if you're the heel, you know, you need to say certain things. And yeah, you can get personal with the guy. But like, the other thing is, when you're taught in promo class, if I say you're a bum and you suck, number one, why would you give a shit about the match? The guy's supposedly a bum. And then if you beat him, who did you beat? You just told everybody he's garbage. He's a bum, you know? So now you didn't beat nobody.
Right.
You know, while you're burying the guy, you still have to tell about how talented he is and put out the good traits to where now your victory means something.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
I think that's something that, you know, it, God, as an actor, one of the most impactful things that I was ever taught or heard from a teacher was very simple, and that is, conflict is the essence. Very simple. Everyone says Shakespeare, greatest, you know, playwright in the history. If you look at Shakespeare, the reason the stuff was so good and can be used today in scenarios for different story plots for many different movies and plays, etc., is because the conflict at the heart of the story is what hooked you in. You didn't care for it because of the fact that, you know, oh, there was a cool sword fight in it. No, it's because when someone got stabbed to death, you were invested, and that was just in, you know, an hour and a half of storytelling up to that point where that, you know, dramatic thing happens. And it's very easy, like you said, to earn that cheap heat by just, you know, picking that off, saying this about that person you smell, blah, blah, blah. There's no emotional investment. And most of all, what pisses me off most about talent who do that lazily is that they themselves are not invested, because you don't know that guy. Why do you have heat with that guy? Why is that fat guy or that smelly guy or that short guy an obstacle for you? They're not. You just don't know how to do it, man. And that was really frustrating. And that's why I love seeing, you know, guys who pick up. I look, you know, Chris Bay to me, when I watch Bay in any situation he's in a promo, he's so fucking good because he just gets it. He understands it. And, down to the simple thing about, when, at Future Shock, when Bay was in the ring with Ice, hey, there's a little conflict there. And that was great, because Chris didn't have to do anything. He just had to look at that belt and point out, and hey, man, you never know. And it's like, holy shit. I'm excited now to see that potentially happen. And that was just one fucking small thing that wasn't over the top. It was just, I believed it. Because Chris believes it. And that's what I think a lot of times, when you don't invest, when you don't know how to invest, that's what makes it really disconnected. And I think that's where fans get bored. You know, you flip stations, you don't care. It's not, hey, you guys aren't pushing this guy right, blah, blah, blah. It's just that there's a disconnect there, whether it's the performer from the material or the material from the fans. And you just want to see the fact that on SmackDown, they celebrated the anniversary that is like an off-year anniversary of that Hogan-Andre main event match with the two referees. It was great still to this day, enough to point out, because it was one of the most memorable invested things. There was all that story between Andre and Hulk, added to the element of DiBiase trying to buy the championship, and then the most absurd thing in the world, DiBiase paid for a referee to look exactly like the referee.
Oh yeah, that was fantastic. I remember watching it there, and I'm like, holy shit, like they saved the other Hebner just for the right spot.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, and to this day, you can celebrate an off-year anniversary or something like that because it's memorable. And I think that's, you know, that's one of the cool things when I see things happen that are memorable. I think that's why, like you said, Cross and Edge, I think that's very memorable because both those guys were so fucking invested that you could believe that as soon as that opportunity hits and they cross paths, it's going to be unreal. Cross's his call out at the 205 champion, I forget his name. Is it Santos Escobar, I think, is the 205 champion?
Yeah, yeah.
When Cross said to him this week that, you know, basically, what are you going to do, little man? And he backed down from Cross. It's like you saw a cool, very simple thing. A smaller guy thumping his chest about how, oh, I could take this guy. And when he was confronted by that guy, boy, I think that there's a lot of us who can relate to, you know, well, I know I've said things behind someone's back, but boy, when I saw him in person, yeah, you're right. I'm getting the fuck out of here because I'm going to get my ass kicked. And it's simple.
Yeah. I don't like that because it puts sympathy on Cross. Like, he's bad talked by this guy and then he confronts him. So now Cross isn't the bully in this situation.
Sure. Sure.
You know, guy was the bully, which now kind of clouds it. Are you supposed to cheer for Cross in this situation? You know, where in most cases he talks about, you know, doing things to people, like dismember them, you know what I mean? And
sure.
It's like, now with this guy, it's like almost like, hey, you should cheer him because this punk youngster trying to get smart now with the badass. Now you want to see the badass always smack around, you know, the big mouth. So that's interesting because I'm not sure what it accomplishes. Again, Cross beating a guy 80 pounds more than him, who's a champion.
Right.
And if it's thumped by Cross, it kind of devalues the championship. Kind of like, you know, Vince would always talk about, hey, not that he talked about it openly, but the word was Vince hates, you know, tag team wrestling.
Right.
So he has John Cena and Randy Orton feud, and they go back and forth. And the tag champions are DiBiase Jr. and who's the other one?
Was it Cody at that time? Was it when they were doing
that? And Cody Rhodes.
Yeah.
And then it's the main event on Monday Night Raw in a handicap match, and Cena wins by pinning the guy clean. And it's like, of course there's no value in your tag team champions. You just buried them in a 2-on-1 match when they had the two. And
but the question,
why would you get behind them?
The question I have, though, with this particular situation is, my feeling is this. As long as those two, as long as Cross and Escobar never touch, then to me it worked in Cross's favor because he's that so intimidating that if you talk shit behind his back and the guy comes out and is in your face, he's so threatening to you that it's like, yeah, I am a scaredy cat. And it might devalue Escobar a little bit. But I think that the other thing, too, is what I hate, too, is that stone cold idea. I always thought that Austin should never have been a face or a heel. He should have just fucked up whoever was in his way and got in his way of being the champ. And that was that. And that's why I think they're going with Cross. What would you say to something like that? If it's really that Cross isn't really a face or a heel, he's just the destroyer.
Yeah, but if they continue, the thing is, like with us, it was the same way. We tried to book him as a heel, but people just saw through that. And again, we booked him as a heel, but the way WWE booked him, he wasn't dirty to beat Ciampa.
Right.
He wasn't dirty to beat Keith Lee. You know, he just went in and he was just a badass.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was the same thing with Austin. Personality wise, you can say he was a heel, but again, he was anti-management. So again, he became the anti-hero where people loved him.
Right.
But if you watch him, he came across as a heel who just happened to be loved.
Yeah.
And, you know, seeing that with a guy like Cross is something that you can definitely see down the line. That people are going to see because, you know, his strongest points are his intensity and his promo ability. So, you know, nobody's looking for a 5-star classic from Drew McIntyre or even Roman Reigns. You know, they're saving that for the AJ Styles of the world,
right,
against Daniel Bryan, you know. So, you know, Cross, sky's the limit. He's well-liked in the company.
Yeah.
But again, he's also different than most.
True.
So he is now an engaging character just by watching him and then having Scarlett there. They are a fantastic team. I think by putting them with him, that, you know, as a singles wrestler for her, it's pretty easy to get lost in the shuffle. There's 50 women.
Yeah.
Now she stands alone, kind of like Lana in the early days of Rusev until they all got buried.
Right.
But, you know, she was a valuable person as just a valet. Far more valuable as a valet than she is as a wrestler. So,
yeah. Well, Joe, we we're around that time where we should let the listeners get on to their day, and hopefully we covered some stuff that was a little bit interesting from a perspective that they don't get to hear a lot, which is, you know, an actual perspective of a promoter and, you know, having talent who's gone up to the main companies and, you know, hearing your views on how it kind of all works for those people who have moved on in those companies. Is there anything else you want to let the listeners know before we say good night?
Yeah, sign up for the FSW network, whether it's an empty arena or limited invite only. You know, you guys are going to get 3 or 4 shows a month for $7. You know, when we have a big show, it's usually $15, you know, on Fight TV. Being that it's our network, we can lower the price and offer a lot more for the value of the dollar.
Yeah.
You know, and the key is just getting it out there. You know, we're talking to some, you know, hopefully having a meeting in the next couple of days with an awesome venue in town that, you know, we would love to get in on. You know, it may be difficult financially, it may be impossible, but, you know, it never hurts to talk to somebody, you know, and if we're lucky, you know, it would be, you know, it's something that doing a show there has been on the bucket list ever since I've seen the place. So
wait, are you gonna, you know, are you trying to fill 65,000 seats at Alliance?
Nope, not yet. You know, that would be something down the line. But, you know, I try to instill to the students and the young wrestlers about being delusional. And, you know, for me saying, oh, yeah, that's what I want to do, that would be delusional. So that would go against everything I'm trying to say. I try to be, you know, even keeled and be realistic about things. And that's most important. So, you know, working with other companies, you know, working in, you know, having a good venue to work with, having good partners, good sponsors, you know, people that have your back, you know, we've learned, you know, unfortunately, that there's people who don't have your back and they're not looking out. I wouldn't even say looking out, because we have to go in there and do the thing. And, you know, there's just some people, you know, as we talked about earlier, they'll go online and without really knowing any information, they'll just, you know, blast you without actually having facts.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've always been the guy sometimes wrongly giving people the benefit of the doubt, but either way, I'm still looking for proof of something to where, because somebody has an issue with somebody, I don't automatically have the same issue. You know, I try to look, you know, directly at it and, you know, try to handle whatever situation it is. So, you know, but in this day and age of social media, that's how it is. People go out there and say whatever the fuck they want to say, no repercussions, you know. They'll try, you know, it's very, very easy to damage reputations without 1 ounce of fact.
Right.
So,
well, on that note, everyone who's tuned in, thank you again for tuning in to everything we do here at the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. But also, you know, if you've subscribed to the FSW network, it's appreciated on Joe's end. And please, you know, let people know, say, hey, you got to check this out. Whether you live in New York or New Zealand, you have the option to, you know, see what's going on here in Las Vegas and check out Future Stars of Wrestling. And I guess that's the positive side of the internet and what you can do with it. So
yes, without a doubt, it's far less expensive to run commercials now than, you know, when we would run commercials and everybody DVR'd it and you were paying big money. Now you can, you know, you can get that reach out there, and, you know, because the world today is far more immediate.
Yeah.
You know, nobody buys a newspaper anymore because I can go online and find out something, you know, within 20 minutes of it happening.
Yeah.
You know, in the past, you'd have to wait for the newspaper the next day to find out that something happened. So,
yeah. Well, everyone, thank you for tuning in again. Until next week, hope everyone has a safe and healthy week, and can't wait to talk again to you next week, Joe, and looking forward to it.